Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. The informal impeachment inquiry took a turn recently when a group of Republican congressmen walked into the proceedings unannounced. Adam Schiff immediately left the meeting and took the witness with him. Oklahoma Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen was there and explains firsthand what happened.
Maybe you could kind of talk to me about how this got started. Was this a, you know what, guys, I mean, we're sitting around the cafeteria having a coffee, let's rush the hearing, or was this, you know, how did this go?
It wasn't anything like rush the hearing. What happened is Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and Steve Scalise, Whip Scalise, asked me to join a press conference. I'm Steve's deputy whip on his deputy whip team, and he asked us, hey, we're going to go down there, we're going to talk to the media and talk about the way the hearing is being ran. I mean, you got Chairman Schiff, Adam Schiff, who is a chair of the Intel Committee, that's running a declassified hearing on impeaching the President of the United States, but yet he's picking and choosing who can and can't go in there. He's picking and choosing what information gets leaked and what information holds within the committee. There isn't anything classified to which they're hearing, to which they're saying, or what is being done. And not to mention, all members of Congress carry a classified clearance, a top secret and some plus top secret clearance. So there's no reason why we can't be present. But in this case, what Adam Schiff is doing is he's allowing just about all Democrats that want access to simply sign in and come in. But Republicans, he's picking and choosing which ones can come in. So we went down there to do the to just do the press conference. While we're there, we were going to go ahead and enter into the first level of the highly secured area, which is what we call a SCIF, but it's the first level where you get approved to go in. And while we were in there, we had Democrats start walking in. And they were just walking in and signing their name on the list and going in. And we said, well, we're going to sign in. And they said, no, you can't come in. Well, why can't we come in? Because the chairman said that it restricts you guys from coming in. Well, about that time, the door opened. And because it's a coded door, when the door opened, Matt Gaetz walked through. And when Matt Gaetz walked through, I was like, I'm going too. I mean, if you're with a friend and he gets jumped by a couple of guys, you kind of go with him, right? And I just kind of walked through the door with him. And when we did, other members came in too. And we didn't go in there to disrupt it. We went in there and simply sat down. The hearing was going on. I sat down right behind Chairman Schiff. We didn't start making noise. We didn't disrupt the meeting. We just simply sat down like we can in any committee hearing that's going on inside the Capitol. We have access to all the committees if we choose to go to them. And so when we sat down, Adam Schiff, as I said, I sat right beside him. He leans over to his counsel, and his counsel goes, he goes, hey, should we adjourn? He says, no, I don't believe we should adjourn. Why don't we just leave? And I believe they will leave and we'll resume the hearing. Well, when they said that, they got up and took the witness, Ms. Cooper, with them and walked out the door. I went over to Jim Jordan and Meadows and Steve Scalise and Gaetz, and I all talked, and I told them what happened. And I said, guys, we're in this thing now. And they agreed, said, we're in it. And if our whole point here wasn't to storm the hearing, it was just to bring attention to it. But now we see what they're actually doing. They're actually stopping the hearing now on an unclassified hearing, but yet they're treating it as though it's classified. And we said, okay, well, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to stay here and until they open this process up.
Okay, so is what the Democratic chairman of this committee, Mr. Schiff, doing, is that, you know, cricket under House rules? Like, if he was a Republican, could he do the same thing?
If this is a Republican, the media would be screaming from the top of their lungs, why isn't this open to the public? This should be open to the public. This is what the media would be saying. If this is a Republican chairman that was doing the same thing, they would be just screaming foul from the top of their lungs. But they're just dismissive of it. And they're just like, well, he can do whatever he wants. And then they come out and release information that is prevalent to their point of view, and then they go out and say the president is guilty. The president is guilty. Well, listen, we're talking about impeaching the president of the United States. impeaching the President of the United States. Underneath Bill Clinton, we had a Republican speaker and Republican chairs. It was open to the media. It was open to the public to see the process it was going through. Underneath Nixon, it was a Democrat speaker and Democrat chairs, and it was open during the process. So why isn't this one open? Well, the difference between the two is Nixon had committed a crime by using the intelligence service to try gaining political favor, and Clinton had committed a crime by lying to a grand jury. In this case, there has been no crime committed, and impeachment is very clear in the Constitution. You have to create treason, bribery, a high crime, or a misdemeanor. None of those have taken place, and they're in search of one, and that's why they're doing this behind closed doors, and the media is going along with it.
Okay, and first off, what I asked was, is it what he's doing allowed under House rules?
The speaker, to go back to that, the speaker is basically able to rule as the speaker sees fit. And in any other case, an impeachment inquiry in the past has been voted on open rules on how they're to proceed with the inquiry. In this case, there has been no rules and no inquiry passed. So really, we don't know what the rules are. We're asking the same questions. What we do know is that as members of Congress, we have access to the same information. And it is not okay for any chairman to withhold unclassified information from all members of Congress, especially when you're going through such a hearing like this. And what I have said many times, and I'm going to continue to say, Russell, if this can happen to the President of the United States, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Don't kid yourself to say that one day it can't happen to you, too, because it was Congressman Max Rose who said the president says he's innocent and all we're saying is prove it. That is not how our judicial system works.
No, but it kind of is how our political system works or has come to over the years. And going back
but
to
Russell, our political system, every individual is still protected by the same Bill of Rights in the Constitution, regardless of the situation. And that's why the transparency should be open and fair to all people.
That's fair. So, you know, part of the issue here is that the Constitution is extremely vague when it comes to this process. It really doesn't spell it out, correct?
Well, no, it does. The impeachment proceedings specifically is in the power of the House of Representatives.
And right.
It's very clear when it says that the impeachments can be proceeded, can move forward basically if treason, bribery, a high crime, or a misdemeanor has been committed. That's pretty clear. And in that case, none of those have taken place.
But how would you know unless you do the investigation? This is the part I'm struggling with. How
well,
do you know?
Again,
because nobody, A, Mr. Nixon was never convicted of a crime. B, Mr. Clinton was never convicted of a crime. Mr. Nixon was not impeached. They were holding the hearings, but he resigned.
And he resigned because of it.
You're going to be impeached, Mr. President, and he decided to step down before that happened, correct?
Well, I'll break this down for you. A crime had been committed. They knew a crime had been committed because the intelligence agencies had been caught in the DNC, and they were investigating the crime. They were making an inquiry into the crime when it took place.
Burglary, yes.
And it found out that Nixon was involved, and Nixon decided before he was impeached to step down. In Clinton's case, Clinton was caught lying to the grand jury. That's perjury. A crime had been committed, and we proceeded underneath a crime being committed underneath the Constitution of the United States that a treason, bribery, high crime, or a misdemeanor had been committed, and then we proceeded with the impeachment inquiries. Andrew Johnson, he tried to remove the Secretary of War underneath the Tenure Act, which was prohibited him from doing that. A crime had been committed, and we proceeded with the hearings, the inquiry of the impeachment. All three cases, a crime had been committed before they started the inquiry proceedings into the impeachment.
Okay.
In this case, no crime has been committed that anybody knows of.
Okay, so is it not criminal for a member of the United States government, and I'm not saying this happened, we're talking, you know, in hypothetically speaking.
Sure.
If a high-ranking member of the federal government approaches a foreign country to and to influence in any way a political race in the United States of America, either by soliciting money or influence or, you know, trying to damage a possible political rival, that's a crime under federal law, is it not?
First of all, go back to what you said. You said, I'm not saying this has happened,
right,
because it didn't happen. If that did happen, then that would require, yes, let's move into a hearing to find out who's involved and what took place. Keep in mind, though, in 2018, three Democrat senators, DeLahey, and I can't think of the other two, but sent a letter to Ukraine basically saying exactly what you said. We want you to look into the collusion process that possibly took place with Trump in the election, and if not, your aid could be withheld. The letter said that. No one brought that up. That letter is open, and it's out there, and the media doesn't talk about it. In that case, quid quo pro was actually did actually happen. We had the transcript that the President of the United States had in the conversation, the transcript of the conversation the President of the United States, President Trump, had with the President of Ukraine. There is none of that in there. It is not mentioned. The whistleblower to which they said this was taking place, there is none of that in there. In fact, 37 times the so-called whistleblower said that he was told, or she, we don't know, that we'll say the person was told or informed. 20 times the whistleblower referred to open sources to which they read, and 9 times said they didn't know. So not one single time on the whistleblower account was there any firsthand knowledge. The transcript doesn't say it. So there's been no crime committed, but yet they're in search of a crime, which that's against the way our judicial system works. We don't go in search of a crime. A crime's committed, and we convict upon the crime that was committed.
All right, sir, let's switch gears for a second, because I know you also kind of wanted to talk about the situation in the Middle East, specifically involving, you know, the pullout from Syria, Turkey crossing the border, the Kurds kind of left hanging. Kind of share your thoughts on all of that, because there were new developments today. Turkey apparently has violated its own ceasefire less than 24 hours after it said it was making it permanent.
Well, we don't know the exact facts.
According to the Kurds,
what the ceasefire shooting and what took place and what didn't. The way that we've been getting trickled information is that there was a conflict with the Kurds in the so-called safe zone. And the ceasefire was to take place because the Kurds had left the so-called safe zone, and they weren't going to pursue them past that. So I don't know exactly all the information. But I will say, to give you a little bit of history on this, I don't publicly go out and talk about this because when I first was involved in this, it was not necessarily deemed classified, but it was deemed sensitive, which is two different things. But in 2015, I was in Turkey and had a conversation, and I was sent there for this particular purpose, to have a conversation with Turkey and Erdogan's representatives and the Kurds on talking about this buffer zone. At that time, it was a buffer zone. And the idea, mind you, 2015 was underneath the Obama administration. The idea is that Turkey does have the right to defend their border against Syria. And they were using that as an excuse. Now, truth be told, they've been at war with the Kurds since 1984, and they were wanting to create a buffer zone between their border and the Kurds too. But at the same time, they're using Syria as a in the fight with ISIS as a reason to have this so-called buffer zone. And they had over 2 million refugees that they were saying, we're going to go 30 miles into Syria, we're going to create this buffer zone, and we're going to put all the Syrians there, refugees, and we're going to police that area. Truth is that they were trying to do also is use the Syrian refugees basically as a human shield at the same time. So there was some back and forth going on in this one. And what we had negotiated, and we were talking with the Kurds and the Turkey, and I was directly involved in these conversations, to say, hey, instead of going 30, why don't you go 20? And that way the Kurds can still have 10. You can still patrol the area where the refugees are, and the Kurds can still have this area because they are strategic partners in ours in fighting the war against ISIS. Well, when we went through this process, the Kurds didn't want to negotiate. They were absolutely no, we're not going to do it. Well, how can we tell Turkey that they can't defend their border? We defend our southern border. They can defend their border too. So this fight has been going on since 2015. This is nothing new. 2015. Fast forward to where we're at now, we were still at a standstill. Erdogan said, we're coming in. He didn't handle it right. We might have been able to handle it a little bit different, but this isn't a surprise to anybody. Then we have a choice, okay? Our fight with ISIS is over. Our relationship with the Kurds was out of convenience. Just like in World War II, our relationship with Stalin and the USSR at that time was out of convenience. We had a common foe. The common foe was the Nazis, and we fought them together. When the war was over, that relationship really hasn't been the same since. Our common foe in Syria was ISIS, and Turkey didn't want to partner with us. The Kurds did. That fight effectively ended March 2019. We still found ourselves in the middle of the tension between the Kurds and the Turks. When we find ourselves in the middle, how long are we supposed to stay there? Mind you, this war's been going on between the Kurds and the Turks since 1984. When Erdogan said, hey, I'm coming in, we had roughly 28 personnel in that safe zone. We're going to hold off a whole brigade coming from Turkey? No. And it's not our position either. Could this have been handled a little bit different? Maybe. But the fact is, we've been negotiating this for four years. No one else is coming out and talking about this, but they sure want to throw the president underneath the bus going along the way, and they don't have all the facts. You can't do that. Before you go out there, you need to know all the facts of what's actually happening. Any situation could probably be handled a little bit different, but that's why we have debriefs, and that's when we learn from how we could handle things moving forward next time. Hopefully, we don't find ourselves in this situation. But I don't disagree with necessarily the president's actions on this.
Okay, because he's certainly getting a lot of disagreement from a lot of Republicans who feel like, and by the way, this is not the first time that the Kurds have fought with the United States.
Oh, I know that. I'm well aware of our history with the Kurds.
Right. So, you know, we've again and again, it seems like, and this is, you know, just kind of what I'm hearing from folks, you know, on the Hill or in academia, that this is not the first time. And the Kurds kind of saw it coming.
Russell, so let me ask you that question. The first time for what?
That the United States has basically left the Kurds for example, they were told, you know, rise up against Saddam Hussein. They started an insurgency. The United States did not back up promises to help them. And Saddam ended up going in. This is back in the 90s, going in and using chemical weapons on them.
There's a lot more to that story and a lot of that stuff is still people are still read in. It's not been released. There's a lot more to that story. You got about a 30,000 foot level on there, but we've been there for the Kurds time and time again. I go back every time we've worked with the Kurds is because we had a common enemy. We are not to stay there. At some point, they're also responsible for themselves. We never agreed to create a buffer zone between them and all their enemies. When we have a common foe, we have fought together and we fought effectively. But when that foe is defeated, we move on. We have never had a relationship with them saying we're going to protect you and for the rest of history. When our fight is over, we come home, and we should.
Do you think that we could have effectively defeated ISIS as we did, or at least for now, without the Kurds?
Absolutely, we could have. We would have lost a lot more men and women from the United States, without question. But we had an effective partnership, and we supplied them and trained with them and worked them and worked with them, provided air cover for them and technical support for them. We had a partnership, and we lived up to that partnership. Now, as far as my other colleagues that want to go out and criticize the president, my question to some of them is when was the last time you had a conversation with them? Have you been directly involved with it like I have? Have you even been over in that region and seen what was going on, or have you just talked about it? I have actually been there. And I'm not criticizing all of them, but if they're going to go out there and criticize the President of the United States and not know all the facts, that's a dangerous area of convenience for you to find yourself in.
Oklahoma Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen, special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.